Today, we're talking with one of the top producing agents in the country, and he's going to share exactly what he would recommend agents do to grow their business in 2024. This is a big one. Stay tuned. This episode of Keeping It Real is brought to you by Real Geeks. How many homes are you going to sell this year? Do you have the right tools? Is your website turning soft leads into interested buyers? Are you spending money on leads that aren't converting? Well, Real Geeks is your solution. Find out why agents across the country choose Real Geeks as their technology partner. Real Geeks was created by an agent for agents. They pride themselves on delivering a sales and marketing solution so that you can easily generate more business. Their agent websites are fast and built for lead conversion with a smooth search experience for your visitors. Real Geeks also includes an easy-to-use agent CRM. So once a lead signs up on your website, you can track their interest and have great follow-up conversations. Real Geeks is loaded with a ton of marketing tools to nurture your leads and increase brand awareness. Visit realgeeks.com/keepingitrealpod and find out why realtors come to Real Geeks to generate more business. Again, visit realgeeks.com/keepingitrealpod. And now, on to our show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real, the largest podcast made by real estate agents and for real estate agents. My name is DJ Paris. I'm your guide and host through the show. And in just a moment, we're going to be speaking with top producer Michael Bell. Before we get to Michael, just a few reminders. Please support our sponsors. We love our sponsors. They are bringing products and services to you that we think are going to help grow your business. In fact, we know it's going to help grow your business. That's why we partner with them. Please check them out. We really appreciate it. And also tell a friend about the podcast. Think of another agent that could benefit from hearing from this top producer, Michael Bell, and shoot them a link over to our podcast. We appreciate it. And last, please leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. We appreciate all your comments and constructive feedback. It helps us make the show even better. All right, let's get to it. My conversation with Michael Bell. Our guest today is Michael B. Bell with Sotheby's International Real Estate in the greater Pasadena area in California. Let me tell you more about Michael. Now, Michael Bell is an accomplished residential real estate broker with an exceptional track record of success spanning over 25 years and encompassing more than 600 closed transactions. Now, nationally ranked in the top 0.1% by the Wall Street Journal, Michael is recognized for his expertise in local, national, and international marketing, offering highly effective strategies and providing high-level fiduciary services. Additionally, he is a distinguished author with his book Seller Mistakes, ranking as number 3 on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list and also number 1 on Amazon. He also contributes to the industry as a real estate instructor at Pasadena City College. Please head over to Amazon and pick up Seller Mistakes. There's a link to that in our show notes. Also, find Michael on his website, which is Michael, middle initial B, Bell. So michaelbbell.com. All of his social accounts you can find there as well. But please do check out Seller Mistakes. We're going to be chatting with Michael about that here right now. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, DJ. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you and really all that you have done in the industry. It's really a remarkable career, at least in my estimation. And I talk to people like you a lot or agents who are at your level, and I'm always just blown away by what you have built in particular. And writing a book to give back, I think, is really fantastic too. But I'd love to start at the beginning of the story. So you've been in real estate for quite some time. Tell us how you got in. Was this something you always wanted to do, or did you fall into it, or how'd you get involved?
Well, listen, thank you for the introduction. It made me feel old. but I'm 54 years old. I started by buying houses and flipping them, and I couldn't find a good realtor to help me. I'm into the details, and I couldn't even find one to get a real estate sign up on time or that wasn't crooked. So at the time, my girlfriend said, you should get your own license, get your broker's license and represent yourself. And wow, what a phenomenal idea. So I started flipping homes, representing myself. And then I had neighbors say, gosh, you did such a great job. Can you represent me? Can you sell my house for me? And I kind of thought, well, that's a great idea. And I got to know a lot of the realtors locally. They liked the way I performed and what I did and how I did it. And I was young. I was in my 20s, and I started my own brokerage, and I was the youngest practicing broker in Pasadena, and I hated it. You ever seen that Super Bowl commercial? It was years ago. It's for Yahoo, and it was these cowboys that are going over the plains, and they're trying to lasso, of all things, kitty cats.
Yep, you know? I remember. You
know, that was awesome, wasn't it? And it was At that time, when I saw that commercial, I thought to myself, I got to get out of this. I did not like managing people. I don't know how you do it, but I kind of felt like after about 10 years of doing that, I'm better off in sales. I never thought I was a sales guy. I thought I'd be horrible at it. I thought I'd be a great manager. It's the opposite. I wound up being really good at sales. I've always taken kind of a different path. Which, you know, we'll talk about in the book and how I try to differentiate myself in front of sellers. But I wound up selling the brokerage. And so I've been a practicing agent with one assistant for the last about 18 years, something like that.
Wow. It is interesting. You know, I sort of have a different path, but a similar sort of realization. So I don't, thankfully, you would not want me to manage our agents. We have almost 800 of them, and I would be a terrible manager because I need everybody to like me, and that makes me sort of by default not a very objective manager. So thankfully, I realized in my role here that I was best at this one thing, which is in my case recruiting agents, and because when you need people to like you, you're probably decent at sales. And so I really consider myself on the sales side as well. So I can absolutely appreciate that. But I also appreciate how hard it is to run a brokerage, especially now, right now with of course all the changes that may or may not be coming everyone's way. But I would love to find out, because even though you started, you know, decades ago, and I apologize, I'm not trying to make you feel old. You and I are not far apart in age, by the way. We are very close in age. But I would like to know about being in your 20s and finding clientele, because to me, that seems like a very difficult task. We have lots of people who are in their 20s who listen to the show and who may be struggling in that way. So I'm curious, you know, you were the youngest broker in Pasadena. You were very successful in your early days. Of course, you're still successful today. By the way, we should mention Michael is top 0.1% producer. He's also with his company Sotheby's, a top 0.3% producer worldwide with Sotheby's, which is obviously, we know how what a white glove firm Sotheby's is. So you're obviously very accomplished. But how did you start building your business in your 20s? Was that difficult for you?
It's tough. Look, I'm 54, and people say I look a lot younger, or I look good for it. When I was in my 20s, I looked a lot younger too. There's a few things that actually I didn't expect this question. There's a thing out there called imposter syndrome. And if you're not aware of it, look it up. And I think it's very, at least for me, it was very natural. I kind of felt like I was an imposter. Like how could I be selling, you know, back then an $800,000 house or $1 million house? I'm only 26 years old. And I felt like an imposter. I think part of getting over that is just to understand the syndrome, you know, just to kind of really when you identify the problem, now you can see it. And now you can kind of develop tools to go over to overcome that. The other thing is, I think in anything in the world, anything you want to succeed in life, you got to lean into it and you have to be willing to fail. And I failed a lot. I screwed up a lot of listing presentations, but then I learned. And I learned what to say, and I learned certainly what not to say. And I learned how long you're supposed to talk and how long, you know, we have two ears and one mouth. You know, you should be listening more than you're talking. But you and I could talk about all the little nuances of all of that, of what you should be and should not be doing. But I felt like I learned that at an early age. And for me, also, the other thing is I love education. I love learning. And I've always kind of realized that I would rather learn from the path of successful people than learn on my own. So I got into training. I have a coach. I'm coaching with Steve Scholl. I know everybody kind of knows that guy.
Sure.
He talks about tactical empathy and emotional intelligence. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you need to go out and buy the book. It's called Never Split the Difference from Voss. I forgot the guy's first name.
Yep.
An absolute game changer in how you talk with people and negotiate with people. But I think it's, went through my journey, I always realized the people that were the most successful were the ones that were trainable. And
yeah, interesting.
Dived into it. And if you don't have the money, I know the coaching's expensive. Real estate coaching with a company can, one of my old companies was either $500 a month for a group coaching thing, or it'd be like $1,000 or $1,500 for a half hour every week. There's a lot of free stuff out there. I mean, you can go to Buffini, and you can go to the other guy. I forgot.
Ferry.
And Ferry has so much stuff online that you almost don't need to pay for any of it, but it's great free content. But I think real estate's a practice. It's a practice of real estate. We're all practicing, and you should keep that practicing going. You need to learn all of that. You need to know what to say, what not to say. And, it's one of the things, I know I'm going off on tangents, but I've got a lot to say about this. My younger brother is a really successful chiropractor, and he's up in Portland, and he sees about 150 people a day.
Whoa.
And they call him a healer. And I don't know, it doesn't matter what you think about chiropractors, but this is what resonated with me. It was like 20 years ago, he had called, we had chatted, and he said that, he just went to a seminar over the weekend. I'm like, so what kind of a seminar? Because there's so many different seminars for these guys. And he went to a seminar on dialogues, what to say to people. And, the thing is, if he helps adjust somebody, 100 times, you can't say 100 different things, but whatever you say, you should be able to nail it. And I thought to myself, if my brother, who's a chiropractor, sees the value in understand dialogue, and most realtors, they stick their nose up to it. They stick their nose up to training, and they stick their nose up to what to say and how to handle objections. But for me, that was, I always believed in it. And then I really believed in it. So I think if you're a real estate agent, you really need to learn what to say and what not to say.
Yeah, and you're right. It's a practice, it's a discipline, it's a skill, and it can be developed. You had also said something a couple of things that I thought were really significant. So I just want to step on these a little bit, because after 550 episodes, there were a couple of things you said that I really want to really sort of highlight, because it's unique to you. Number one, you said something that I thought was very, very powerful. You talked about imposter syndrome. Every young realtor, or rather every new realtor, I should say, you don't have to be young to be a realtor, of course, every new realtor goes through this, especially when they get their first listing and their first buyer, or even their first 10. They're going to they don't know everything. Of course, they may be out on their own, not in a group, and they may feel that way. What Michael said was something very, very subtle. It was a nuanced point, but it was a good one. And he was really talking about mindfulness. What he was saying was, once he recognized what the syndrome was, in his case, imposter syndrome, by the way, very common. And I have it. I have it as a podcast host after 5 years. I still think, like, why would anyone listen to me?
I still have it.
Me too. And maybe it never goes away, and that's okay. Because as long as I can acknowledge, for example, I have an event I'm going to tonight at 7:00. I have to get dressed up. It's this fancy whatever. And I don't know anybody there. I will literally not know one person. Well, I will know one person, but I probably won't even see this person. So I'm going blind. I know at about 6 p.m. tonight, my brain is going to go, don't go, stay at home, lay on the couch, play with the cats. I just know that's what's going to happen. Now, since I know that's going to happen, I can be mindful of it. And then I have a strategy to overcome that so I could actually go to the event tonight, because it's actually a good thing, a healthy thing for me to go do tonight. So you said this, and again, I know this seems maybe not as well related to real estate practice, but you know, understanding oneself and understanding these tendencies that we all have, these urges or these thoughts that are maybe not super helpful, it's okay. We don't have to necessarily fix them as long as we can acknowledge them. And then as Michael said, you know, just create other skills to compensate for that. So I just wanted to honor you for saying that, because and the fact that you say you still feel that from time to time is so human and honest. So thank you. The other thing I wanted to mention, well, now I've gotten lost myself, but it was, you know, we'll get to it a little bit further on. I really want to dive into this book, because we've had a lot of authors on this show, a lot of agents who write books for various reasons, and yours is really a cool idea that I think should resonate not only with the brokerage community and all the people who listen, but maybe a consideration to provide this even to their clients. So the book is called Seller Mistakes. Tell us about it. What is the book and why'd you write it?
There's a copy of the book. That's what it looks like, yellow book. Well, first off, the working title, which my publisher hated, was called High Level Fiduciary Sales, because I work with a lot of attorneys and I thought that would resonate. The publisher thought it sucked, just plain out sucked. So we worked that. So for me, I realized that most sellers, if they're going to pick you, if they're going to hire you, you want to sound different. You want to, and I know we're all trained the same way. And oftentimes when I go into a listing presentation, sometimes they'll interview 10 agents. Usually when I get hired, they always say the same thing. You are so much different because everybody else said the same thing. And everything I say is actually in the book. So the book kind of is my listing presentation. I guess you could say that. But so for me, I was continually told, and I think everybody else is told, that there's certain things you should be doing to sell a house. You need to advertise in the newspaper. You need a real estate sign out there. You need to do open houses, all that other stuff. And I found out that the National Association of Realtors puts out a questionnaire to, I think it's 160,000 people every year that just bought or sold a house. And they ask them 135 questions. And over time, it was 100 questions, now it's like 135 questions. And they ask them a whole slew of all these questions. And if you return it, then they send you coupons for all this stuff. So it is really the preeminent and only real true survey, a real estate survey that's out there. The National Association of Realtors puts it out every year. And it costs you like $25, or you can get the free version. And it's like 10 pages. And so I love data. And what I was reading in that was completely different than what I was being told by the industry to say to sellers, if that makes sense. I'll give you an example. My broker, every broker I've been with all said the same thing. You need to do open houses. Open houses sell houses. But I mean, look. I should have preempted all of this by saying, if you're a real estate agent, you're probably going to hate what I have to say. You're going to hate a lot of the stuff I have to say, but I want you to know something. It's not my opinion. This is from surveys. So this whole, and the book, I was hoping to sell a few hundred copies. It sold 40,000 copies. All of a sudden, I get a phone call from the publisher saying, you hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list, number 3. It's been 2 years now, but to go back to open houses as an example, the National Association of Realtors does not ask brand new buyers if you bought your house because you found it on an open house. Oh, you wonder why? The reason why is the percentage of people that bought a house because they went through it on an open house is so low. And what they do is, in the industry, everybody kind of knows that open houses have an 8% chance of selling the house. But get this, if you read the question says, and I detail this in the book, the question says, did you find your house because of an open house sign, a billboard, any kind of sign? And this includes data. Data for new construction. New construction, they're open all the time. So right. About 10% of the national stock is new construction. So they lop all of that in, and it's 8%. But like I said, they don't ask really, you know, they don't ask this the finite question. And it's probably, and nobody really knows it, but it's probably between 2-4%. So you got 2-4% there. Look, how about the real estate sign? The real estate sign is really important. The brand wants the sign out there. You have a less than 1% chance of selling your house because of the real estate sign.
Right.
Print ads and mailers, that's less than 1% too. So if you're an agent, your broker is telling you to do open houses, do print mailers, and have the real estate sign. That probably accounts for maybe 5-6% of the effectiveness of selling your house. I kind of thought, well, I'm going to dig into all this data and learn a little bit more. And what for me, what I was looking at, I started doing a white paper, and a white paper is kind of like a research paper. And I started writing it, and it's loaded with data because I love data, and the book is full of data. It's not a lot; some of it's my opinion, but the vast majority of it is really hard data, and it's all attributed to where it came from. And I started writing this white paper. And I went to a seminar on, I love seminars, but I went to a seminar on writing a book. And I kind of thought, well, I'll look into this thing. And after the seminar, I approached the publisher. I said, this is my idea. And he said, it'd be a fantastic idea. So it took me 5 years to write this book.
It's, wow.
Every realtor has a little bit of ADD. We're busy. And I'll tell you, it's tough. It's really tough to write a book. If anybody here has ever written a book, what do you look at? You're pulling out a book?
No, I am. I forgot to take ignore me. I'm just taking a pill.
So it took me 5 years. I was hoping to sell a few hundred copies. And like I said, in the first 3 months, it sold almost 35,000 copies. It's still selling. And, A lot of the people that are buying are real estate folks. There was a commercial real estate brokerage in Pasadena. The manager called me. We had coffee 2 months ago, and he wanted a box of books that were signed by me, and he bought them from me, and he's giving it to all of his sales agents. So I think this would be, you know, this book is actually really intended for a home seller, and primarily a seller who's gone through the process before, so they kind of they get it. They understand. The first-time home seller may not really quite understand the nuances and the difficulties and the challenges and the mistakes because they haven't done it yet. But it also, it's a great tool for anybody across the country. If you wanted to buy it and use it for your listing presentation, I think it would be great. I mean, some of the items in there is not, like I said, your realtors may not like this, but like dual agency. You know what? I get a lot of business because I bring up dual agency within the first.
Yeah, let's talk about dual agency. I love it.
We all know that dual agency, now it's not always bad. I get it. I know people are going to, I have some bad reviews on Amazon and they're from realtors. They don't believe in this, but I think we could all agree that dual agency primarily almost always benefits the buyer and the real estate agent. It really rarely benefits the seller. Yeah. Okay. I think that's a fair statement, right?
Yep. Agreed.
However, if you're in a listing presentation and you show up to a seller, I think what I do, because sellers want to see how different you are, I tell them right out the gate. I want to let you know how different I am. I won't represent a buyer on this transaction. I believe that dual agency is the scourge of our industry. And I go, and some of them don't understand dual agency, and some of them think that it's good if I have my own buyer. So I'll go into it. And then what I'll do is I'll tell them, whoever you interview, and I think you should interview multiple agents, but that agent should bring it up. And that agent should bring it up in the first few minutes of the presentation. That's how important, you shouldn't have to ask. And if you have to ask about it, then they know that it's important, and then they know that they can't, you know, they really shouldn't be doing it. I think you should preempt it and tell them right up front. It's going to make you look better. It's going to make you make them realize you're a real true fiduciary and you really have their back.
I'm a huge fan. And thank you for all of this. This is such great stuff. I wanted
you
to
like it. I thought you may hate it.
I like it because it makes perfect sense to me. Thank you. And I have a couple of thoughts. So first, I want to go back to open houses just for a second, because here's what I heard and here's what I see as an opportunity. And I want you to tell me if you agree or correct, maybe in a way, because you're out there in the trenches actually doing it. But what I heard, I'm our marketing guy at our company, so I'm always thinking with my marketing hat. And what I heard by saying, you know, open houses, this is, again, a huge part of a listing presentation. Here's all the cool stuff I'm going to do for you, Mr. and Mrs. Seller. I'm going to do open houses. I'm going to put a sign up. I'm going to have flyers. We're going to paper the neighborhood. We're going to get this out on every website on the planet. And but open houses specifically, I think it's a huge opportunity to say, let me tell you what open houses actually do, Mr. or Mrs. Seller. They're great for me. And here's why they're great for me. And they're great for, you know, maybe other agents in my office who might be with me on the open house, because it's a lead generator for me. I get to have all these buyers come in. Maybe some of them are unrepresented. I get to walk out with all this new business. Is it actually going to help you sell your home? Well, let me show you the data. The data says probably not. And so I'm happy to do them because I'm always wanting to grow my business, but I don't want to do these with the expectation that you think it's actually going to help move your home. Here's what the data says will actually get your home sold. Even just saying that to me separates you from a lot of other agents. Curious to get your thought.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I talk to sellers all the time and say, I'm gonna do what's most effective. What's most effective is obviously great marketing, being on the multiple listing service, all the other portals, great photos, great description, an agent that's going to pick up the phone. I mean, this is one of the things I tell them. Have your friends call me. And if I don't call them back within 2 hours, you can fire me.
I love that.
I mean, you ought to be able to return a phone call in 2 hours, right?
Or absolutely. Email.
Yeah. But we've all been there where we call the listing agent and the buyer side, and they don't call you back, or they don't call you back for 2 days or something like that. It's frustrating. But you know, the biggest complaint that people have, and probably realtors do in real estate, is communication.
Lack of communication. Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I once had on one of the very top agents here in Chicago, and I asked her, I go, well, what do you think it is that you do differently? And I know that this isn't a complete answer, but it was the first answer she said. And when I pressed her, she goes, no, that's pretty much it. This is a crazy thing to say because it sounds so obvious, but I've yet to hear very many other agents say this, except for top producers like yourself who do this. She says, I call every one of my clients every week and I give them an update on what's going on, because I don't want them to have to call me to find out what's happening with the home that's for sale or the home I'm trying to put an offer on or whatever. I said, okay, well, yeah, everyone does that. She goes, no, everybody does not do that. And that was her sort of like, that's what I do. And I go, that is shocking that it is, that the bar could be that low to clear, because it seems like such an easy thing to do.
I tell people I'll call them by Friday. Even if I have no update, I'm just gonna let them know there's no update. And then I think we all have these programs where we can send the market updates so they know how many clicks and stuff like that. But yeah, you gotta call them. And you know, if you don't call them on a Friday, by Friday evening, they're gonna be bugging you over the weekend and they're gonna be pissed. So you may as well pick up the phone and just call them. They want to hear from you.
Of course, yeah. And we're I guess that's a different conversation about compensation, but we are real estate professionals are compensated quite nicely for this service. And, you know, putting a home on the MLS is, I mean, anyone could really do that, but being in communication and constant communication, they're paying really for expertise. They're paying for customer service. They're paying for guidance. And that's where your value comes in. I have a question though. Let's say you get a text at 10 p.m. and you're done for the day. You're maybe spending time with friends or family. Do you tell them, hey, you know, what do you do in that scenario? Are you still responding, or are you going, I've already told them that my hours are this and this, and I'll get to them next morning. You know, what are your boundaries around that?
Maybe you'll agree with this. I mean, no one's dying in real estate. It can wait till the next day. I mean, it's not like a medical emergency. Usually, I try to set the parameters when, you know, you start getting to know people and you start being friendly with them, but I don't tell them right up front, but after they've signed the listing, I go, hey, by the way, I just want to let you know, I've got two kids, I've got a wife, I like to sit down for dinner every night. If, you know, if you text me, I will respond, but it might be as late as 9 o'clock because I do stuff with the boys. We do Boy Scouts and blah, blah, blah. I think if you tell them that you will respond and it's easier to with a text, that, you know, most everybody's great. I mean, sometimes we do have monster clients that are just, you can never make them happy. And God, you can't wait to sell those things or just let them expire and walk away. Right. But yeah, it's just part of the business. But most people, if you just tell them that, like, I will respond, they're cool with it. Or they'll just say, you know what, probably nothing will, you know, is that important. Well, it can just wait till the next day. But I do tell people that text is great for me. If it's great for you, great. But I think one of the things you should ask your clients is too, is how do you like to be communicated with?
100%.
Do you like email? Do you like a phone call? Do you like text? Because if you have an older client and you're texting them, you might not know that you're just pissing them off, you know, because they just, this is not for them. So you got to ask.
Yeah. And I'll have a little pro tip to throw on top of that. So asking Michael is such a smart thing. How do you prefer to be communicated with? And then I only heard it one agent ever say this, but I think this is such a cool thing. If you're working with clients who have different religious affiliations or maybe from different cultures, different ethnicities, and they may have special days that they do not work. So that's also a nice thing, or maybe certain holidays that they want respected, and they might not want to hear from you on those days. So that's another great question is, hey, are there any days that you observe where you don't want me contacting you? And again, all of this just demonstrates that you care about the person, that you care enough to ask and you care enough to want to be there, you know, in doing it their way. But I want to go back to listing presentations because you are clearly the king of listing presentations. You wrote a book that essentially is a listing presentation, which every one of our listeners needs to read. I mean, 40,000 people have already bought it. It's clearly a good book. It's got great reviews. And I can't wait to dig in. But I would also like to know, you know, you said, hey, this is why I don't do dual agency. I love that. Within the first few minutes, here's what dual agency is. Here's why I think it's the scourge of the business. And let me explain the math about why, as a fiduciary, it doesn't really make a lot of sense for me to do that because my job is to protect you and et cetera. And you have data to suggest that dual agency doesn't benefit the seller. So would love to know what else you may do in a listing presentation that differentiates yourself.
I actually tell people they should interview a few agents. National stats, 75% of all home sellers interview one agent.
Yeah.
Okay. 10% of them interview three or more. And then the crazy thing is that 75% of all home sellers never use that same agent again.
That's crazy. That they
wound up hiring. So you got to wonder why. There's a lot of reasons why. I mean, one of the amazing stats from the National Association of Realtors, they say that 85% of all new agents will be out of the business within the first 5 years. So if you're talking to a seller and you're asking them, hey, who are you interviewing? And then you can say, by the way, just so you know the stat, it's a crazy stat, but the National Association of Realtors says that if you're hiring somebody that's only been in the business up to 5 years, there's an 85% chance that they're going to be out of the business. So you could be hiring a loser. Or that's kind of mean, actually. I shouldn't say that. But you do have to be careful. You know, in this business, I mean, experience is really important. You just look at the scoreboard. I mean, do you want to work with somebody who's winning all the time or somebody who's trying to win?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really, really great point. And we should also mention too that Michael really plays in a pretty exclusive sandbox with his listings and his clients. You know, I was perusing some of your listings. It was not uncommon to see listings in the mega million sort of range. I know your average home sale is well over, is right around 2 million or so, and you go up from there. And so these, I'm curious if you, did you always play in the luxury or the high net worth space, or were you, did you sort of eventually graduate to those types of clients?
So I know where you're going with this, because everybody wants to, if you want to make more money in real estate, the easiest way to do it is to go to a higher price point. And it, when you get to those higher price point ones, I think it's important to market yourself a lot more. And I mean, you know, you should be doing everything you can to sell that house, but do more stuff that's probably not necessarily going to help the seller, but you yourself do more social media, do better photos, do, you know, a little bit more, promotion. And certainly, you know, all of that's going to help, but is it, are those little things really going to be the difference maker to sell that house? Probably not. I mean, we all kind of know that if you're priced correctly, and if you answer your phone and you have the right photos and you have a good description, it usually takes care of itself. I mean, I think that's a fair assessment. People screw that up all the time. But to answer your question, how did I, there was a, part of it is obviously the market. In Pasadena, the average sales price, when I got into the business, when I was flipping houses, the average sales price was probably, might've been 300,000. And now the average sales price here in 2024 is easily $1.6 million, $1.5 million. So I had that benefit. But I think it's important, like part of the thing that slowed me down as an agent is that imposter syndrome. I always kind of felt like, oh, I can't do that $2 million thing. They'll never hire me. You just got to lean into it. And you know, even if you've got an intimidating listing coming up, just do it. Just do it for practice. I mean, frankly, I go on listing appointments that I have an idea. I have a pretty good idea I'm never going to get because they have a family member or somebody, or I was able to weasel my way in because they've already made a decision. They're going to hire so-and-so, but they haven't signed the listing contract. And I say, hey, can you just give me a shot for 20 minutes? And they say, basically, yeah, I'll do it, but it's going to be a waste of time. So, you know, that's a great opportunity. You should do it. You should absolutely do it. And you know what? Even more so, get this. You should lean into it and just practice your dialogues. Practice the words that you know you were so intimidated by saying, and just kind of forget that imposter syndrome and go for it. Because once in a while, you're going to nail it. Once in a while, you're going to get that listing. But you got to lean into this stuff.
Yeah, it's this willingness to lose. And willingness to be wrong, or willingness to do it imperfectly, or just the willingness to, it's just trying, right? And yes, the imposter syndrome comes up. It deflates us. It's hard for us to, it's the boulder we have to push up the hill every day, but it's a worthy effort. And if you can, obviously Michael is a perfect example. He is willing to not get a listing. He is willing to still go, and he wants the opportunity, and it's not fun to not get a listing, but it is also practice for the next listing.
It's great practice. You should absolutely do it. You should absolutely do it. I mean, what I meant to say is it's called failing forward. That's important in your business, is you have to fail forward. You have to keep going at it. Go on wild, little bit of wild goose chases, not too much. I mean, you know, you shouldn't be preparing for 4 or 5 hours for a listing presentation. You just shouldn't be. There's a lot of easier ways of, but you should have a really good, decent CMA package. You should have a really good little marketing package, something you can just email ahead of time. They may not look at it, so you show up with something that's bound with paper, but you should not be preparing for 4 or 5 hours. I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And you should just, analysis paralysis, I guess, but you should know exactly what you want to accomplish in that presentation, what you want to communicate, and most importantly, what information you're looking to extract, which means obviously, as you said at the beginning, listening, asking the right questions, it's really the fastest way I've found to building relationships with people is getting interested in them. And this isn't anything new. Dale Carnegie wrote about this in the early 1900s, how to win friends and influence people is basically just ask them about them. But it really is super important, especially as an agent, because you are a fiduciary. You do need to act in their best financial interest, and you will only know how to do that if you ask a lot of questions in those buyer and seller presentations. So I could not agree with you more there. But I know the thing I forgot earlier, I know we're going back about 20 minutes, but it relates to what you just said. The dialogue, this idea that I was really impressed by your brother, the chiropractor, who said, you know, I probably should learn what to say and what to ask. In addition, chiropractor is a very physical job. It really doesn't require much speaking, because what they're doing is, you know, hands-on work. But yet he saw the value in that. And he knows that it's critically important, sort of how you say things, what you say, with respect to patient, you know, and professional. And this doesn't change as a realtor, right? You're the professional and you have, you know, clients. And this idea of practicing dialogue is something that doesn't really get talked enough about, I think, in this industry. It's certainly something a good coach would have you do, is role playing and memorizing. I mean, look, you know, we want to be able to go off script, but you need a script to be able to go off script, I think. And so I love the fact that I know you don't spend 4 to 5 hours preparing for a listing presentation, but you know exactly what you're wanting to accomplish in that listing presentation, because of course you've been successful. It doesn't just happen randomly because you showed up a bunch of times. You obviously have a very strong process, and you wrote a book about it, which is again, Seller Mistakes. Tell us a little bit more about the book. So the book really goes into detail. It's your sort of listing presentation. By the way, how generous is Michael to write a book basically showcasing his entire process for the whole world to see? He's not threatened by this. He's actually, it was probably a real honor for him to be able to share that. So really encourage everyone to head over to Amazon, pick up the book. I'm excited to read it, but tell us a little bit more about the book.
So, God, there's so many things. I actually have a chapter about why it's wrong and it's a mistake to hire a friend or family member to sell your house. And oftentimes I think we're all confronted with this when you go on a listing presentation, or you find out later that they're just hiring, they're using you for information, and they're just going to tell their friend or family member to sell. So I kind of jump right into that when I'm talking with them, and I ask them, are you interviewing other agents? I mean, by the way, you shouldn't be afraid to ask questions. Ask, you know, you want to find out what their motivation is, all this other stuff. But oftentimes you can just ask them, am I competing with a friend or family member? And if they usually will tell you, or if they say, you know, I'm not really comfortable telling you that, well, they just told
me. And that's
you.
Yes.
But for example, on the friend and family issue, one of the things that I bring up is, you know, if you are hiring a friend or family member, I just want to throw something out at you. And they go, what? You know, because they're like, you know, what could this realtor be saying? I said, when you hire somebody like that, you're leaving the nuclear option off the table. And then they go, what's the nuclear option? The nuclear option is that you can't yell at them and you can't fire them, because you're going to ruin a family relationship or a friendship, and it's not worth it. And I see this all the time. You shouldn't do business with people, with your friends or family members. Look, you can hire me, you can fire me, you can yell at me, you can blast me, you can ignore me, you can be rude to me. You can't do that with the other people. There's a lot to be said about having a business relationship with somebody. And oftentimes they'd be like, oh my God, you're right. You know, and then they'll talk about how, you know, everybody has stories about a relationship that went sour because you went into business with that person. But I think it's important to kind of throw that out there while you're talking with somebody, maybe over the phone or when you're getting there. But I want to backtrack a little bit. What I said about motivation, you know, only motivated people buy or sell real estate. Okay. Right. We all agree with that. Okay. So it's important to figure out their motivation. Now, one of the questions I ask all home sellers is, even on the phone, if I get a phone call from somebody and I'll just say, hey, I have a few questions for you. Imagine I just sold your house. You're super happy with me and all that other good stuff. Where do you sleep tonight? Leave it like that. Where do you sleep tonight? If you have the answer, if the answer is, I don't know, I'll just figure that out later. I'm just looking, and then they'll tell you, I'm just looking for the best price and I'll figure it out later. Well, you've got yourself an unmotivated seller. You need to be careful. So that's one of the most important questions to ask somebody. And I would do that on the phone call when they call you. And then at least you know where you're standing. And if you decide you want to move forward with an interview, great. But at least you know that, you know, they're probably going to just waste your time.
That is an amazing tip. You're kind of blowing my mind right now because I've never really heard that specific question before. It's a brilliant question because it does sort of give you insight into how much they've thought about this and how they're looking. You're right. And they might just be in that preliminary stage of looking, which is fine if you know that as the agent and you're like, okay, well, I know this is a 12 to 16 month sort of thing. Okay, well, I'll just build the relationship now. But at least I know kind of where they're at. And so that they, so if I'm okay with them wasting my time, at least I can make that decision as the agent versus finding out down the road that they've been wasting my time.
Well, so get this. This goes back to the stats. It's kind of boring, but it's important to see. The National Association of Realtors asked that question, why did you sell your house? The top 10 reasons why people are selling their house are their life events, divorce, job, whatever, downsize, upside, blah, blah, blah. It's not in the top 10 or in the top 30 or the top 100. It is not, oh, if I just get my price, I'll move. That's not why people sell, to get their price. So you got to jump on that.
That's a really, really good point. So, boy, that is a great point, Michael. I really appreciate that. Again, these are the kind of things that are in the book, everyone. And Michael does a deep dive into, and you know, he mentioned at the beginning of this conversation that the National Association of Realtors does this study every year, and it is fascinating. And it's worth the $25. If you don't have the $25, as Michael said, read the free version, because you're going to find out at the very least how people choose their realtor, and or at least the statistics of what is most likely going to be the motivators for people to choose their agent. And what's interesting to me is, you know, for 20 years, I've been hearing that technology is ultimately going to replace the agent because the agent won't be as significant. Because if we looked at, you know, the what agents did, a lot of the focus was on access to MLS. Of course, we know that's everyone has access now, so that's not necessary. The value really comes in many other ways, everything other necessarily than maybe just the home selection, because of course people can really do that on their own largely. But then they're going to look to you for all of the, and again, I think this too is part of the presentation when you talk to a buyer or seller. Here's how I earn my fee or my service. This is actually what I do for you. This is, you know, here's the data to support it. And here's why it's significant.
You want to hear something crazy? In the last 20 years, according to the National Association of Realtors, a little over 20 years ago, which is, you know, or it was more like 30 years ago, the sellers said they highly value the help of a real estate agent. It was in the high 70s. And then we have the internet and all this boom and all these, you know, great, you know, advances. And it has gone up an average of almost 1%, and it's almost 90%. And the reason why people everybody says we're going bye-bye, actually consumers want us even more. Yeah. And because it's just so complicated, so difficult. They're so busy. They just don't have people. I mean, in California, our purchase agreement is being revised again. It's been revised every 6 months for the last 5 years. Our listing form is going to be completely revised. There's so many new forms and stuff like that. Well, I don't think we're going to go bye-bye. And there are certain forms you need and certain forms you really shouldn't have, but you could use. But if you use them, you're kind of not practicing it correctly. And if an attorney gets a hold of that, they can show a pattern of you not understanding the process. And it's just like, why would a consumer not want a real estate agent? But, you know, it's not my opinion. Those are the stats.
Yeah, and very encouraging statistics. I think here in Chicago last year, 95% of all residential transactions went through a realtor, which was actually up from previous years, you know, a 0.5% or here and there. But it's not going down, which is a good thing for people in the industry, like everyone listening and myself as well and Michael, but really showcasing the value of what realtors provide, that even though what MLS used to be under lock and key. It is not under lock and key anymore. And more changes are coming, of course, as we're all following. But it has not been under lock and key for quite some time. Zillow essentially blew that out of the water. And we still are as important, in fact, more important now, because it's such a large financial transaction. I just went through it myself maybe 3 years ago. And I was, I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this. Well, I'm not a practicing agent, so this was a little bit easier for me to do, but I did not represent myself. I had my boss represent me because, number one, he did it for free. He's my employer. He's a good guy. But also because I was way too emotional, and I knew I was going to, I was in distress. I was like, I don't know. I wasn't thinking clearly. I couldn't be objective. And as a result, I had somebody else do it for me. But I thought that was a smart play for me, because I was not able to see my own deal clearly, because I know it was so much money. I had saved up for years, and I was putting this big down payment down, and I was terrified.
I think we all have blind spots. I sold a house, one of my own homes, about 2 years ago during COVID. It was just a great time for me to sell this one property. And I hired an agent in our office. I paid her a full commission. And I was surprised at the blind spots that I had, just because I was emotionally involved. And I don't know, I was kind of surprised the blind spots, like I said, that I had. And I'm really happy I hired her. And I made a lot more money than I thought. And it was smoother. And but yeah, there you go. I mean, we all have blind spots.
Yeah. And it's also a good thing to remember that this is what our clients go through, right? This is what, and as agents, this is our value, that we can help reduce that stress. We can help, or at least tackle the stress, or say, hey, I'm taking it off your plate onto my plate as your professional. I'm going to take care of this. I'm on it. So you don't have to be as freaked out. So I'm a huge, huge fan of this. I have one question. So sure. Actually, I have lots of questions, but I have this one question I've been wanting to ask you. So we know right now it's a difficult time, I think, to be a realtor. Certainly brokerage production is, although it seems to be getting better, so that's exciting. But certainly last year was a tough year for most agents, most brokerages. And, you know, rates were high, inventory was low. What advice might you have to somebody who's listening who maybe isn't flush with clients right now? Right now they're going, well, my buyers want to wait for rates to come down. The Fed said they're going to cut rates 3 more times this year. Inventory's low. I can't seem to get anybody to list. What might you suggest is just ways to stay busy and keep active?
That's a great question, because it's a question I asked myself last year. Last year I had 3-month period where nothing happened. And I had a great year. I outsold everybody in this office. But it was 3 months and it was scary. And so what I did was, I'm going to plug another book, and it's an old book. It's called The 7 Levels of Communication from Michael Mayer. And I used to be at Keller Williams, and Keller Williams, for their mega camps, would always promote an author. And I thought, I think this is one of the best books that a realtor can read. And I'll save you the money, and I'll tell you the story. The story is about a down and out loan officer that can't get things going, and he doesn't understand why everybody else is more successful. And he goes to the seminar and learns, and this is how the principles of the book are taught. And what he learns is that you need to be influential, and there's different levels of being influential, and there's different levels how you communicate that. That's the 7 levels. And there's a line. Imagine a line here, and everything you do below this line is not influential, and everything above this line is influential. There's 4 things that are very influential that you can do in real estate sales. And I guess it would probably apply to almost any other sale. The number one thing you can do is seminars. So if you can think, like I do seminars on my book. I have people come over. It's a dinner event. I buy them dinner. I bring dinner in. They're in my office. I give a market update. I chit-chat about the pitfalls of selling your house. I take question and answers, and then I do a book signing. And then every time I do that, I get 4 phenomenal leads, 4 or 5 phenomenal listing leads. I'm mostly a listing agent. I don't go for the buyers. I have buyer transactions, but 90% of my sales are listings. So seminars. And you can do that with buyer seminars too. It's easy. It's not that hard to do all of this. The next thing you can do is what's called face-to-face. And face-to-face is going to be lunches or dinners, but you got to get face-to-face with people. The next level is voice-to-voice. You know, everybody can, you can pick up the phone and just dial for dollars. That's influential. And the next thing below that is handwritten letters. And in his book, he actually talks about how to write a letter, what kind of letterhead you use, what kind of form, you know, you don't want it branded with your real estate company. I mean, there's a lot of little nuances. And then you have this line. And below that is non-influential stuff. And guess what's under there? It's emails, social media, mailers, door hangers. And that's all the lazy stuff that realtors do, because it's normal for anybody to hide behind all that stuff, hide behind everything and just kind of do all of that stuff. But I think any top producer that's going to be listening to this is probably going to acknowledge that voice-to-voice, face-to-face, and seminars are fantastic. And I know that there's realtors out there that get a lot of business from Facebook, and that's fine. But if you're going to do Facebook, I mean, you need to nail it.
Oh, you need to nail it, and you need to be doing it probably every day, all day long.
2-3 hours a day. And yeah. So, you know, that's why we talked about off air. I don't have a lot of social media stuff. I mean, I have a little Facebook business page. I have a little YouTube channel, but I don't get any leads from it. And sure, it's a hole in my business. I could be doing something better, but I'd rather not. I like to do face-to-face and seminars. That's my thing. And you know, the National Association of Realtors, they survey people on why they hired a certain real estate agent. 75% of that decision is because they like you and they trust you. Okay, hello. Get out there. Have lunch with people. You don't have to have expensive lunches. Grab breakfast, grab coffee, grab dinner, you know. Easy. Do the same thing with attorneys, you know, CPAs. Yes. Those are where your referral sources. If they like you and they can remember you, I mean, this business is so simple, it's hard.
I know. I love that. You just got me on that one. It's so simple, it's hard. It is hard. But it is simple, right? It's like a push-up. It's hard, but it's simple and it's effective. And so what you're really talking about, how I heard that, is influential activities are interpersonal, meaning we are interacting with another human being, either in person, over the phone, or you know, via a handwritten note or something to that effect. But or you know, we're either sitting with them, we're talking with them, or we're writing them. And you know, just to go back to handwritten notes for a second, I mean, Brian Buffini built a whole career. This is reducing him to just one thing, which is not fair, because he's a great coach. But one of his big tenets is handwritten notes, and he's not wrong. And in fact, nobody does them at all anymore. So the idea of even doing a handwritten note in and of itself is going to separate you. And I like the idea of not using company letterhead. You know, get your own stationery, or just do some. You know, and we'll plug the 7 Levels of Communication book, so people can learn exactly sort of the thoughts behind how to do this. But interpersonal communication is the way. And I'll tell you, one of the top agents in Chicago, I asked her what she's doing this year. And she goes, you know, I have a lot of people. She's been doing this 20 plus years. I'd love to get your opinion on this. Is speaking of interpersonal, is she has, of course, people as they retire, they move out of Chicago and Illinois and go somewhere warm. And a lot of times that's Florida or Texas or Arizona or wherever it may be. And she refers business all over the place. And she goes, you know, I've never visited any of these other agents. So she flies down, she interviews 3 or 4 different agents. She hangs out with them for a day or so to really understand what do they do, how do they do it. And I said, boy, that is a brilliant strategy, because of course, hopefully some leads will come her way as she's providing leads. But she goes, no, these are my clients. I have to make sure that as I'm referring this out to somebody in Boca Raton or wherever, that they are as good as I am, because I just can't look at Zillow and go, well, this is the person with the best number of reviews. I mean, yeah, that's a start. But she goes, I need to meet this person face to face. I want to see how they interact with their clients. And I thought, boy, what a smart strategy.
Yeah, that's great. And I think for a newer agent, you had asked about this, you know, what do? It's easy for a new agent, I think, to feel like a fire hose has hit your mouth.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to swallow. And so there's two things I've always told agents. I haven't said this in a while, but it's really important. You should only listen to people that are making a lot of money.
That's true. Yes.
Because everybody's going to give you opinions when you get into the business.
Opinions are free.
I used to do this. I used to do that. And this is how it works. And it's like, well, if they're not, okay, if you want to make $1 million in real estate, talk to people that are making $1 million in real estate. Sorry, don't listen to anybody else, you know. But the other thing I think is really important is, and I learned this when I was at Keller Williams, and I think the world of Keller Williams and the education stuff that they have, but what I learned from there is you should do three things and do them really well. Don't do more than three things. It's just too hard to do. So if you're going to do seminars, great. If you're going to do social media, great. But don't feel like you have to do 10 things because you spread yourself too thin. You're not doing it very well. And the consumer is going to figure that out really quick and you're not going to get any business.
Yeah,
nail it.
Yeah. Jack of all trades, master of none. Yeah. So you want to be a master. So master three. Yeah. I'd read that in many, many business books years ago, just in a day, like running the business here. It's like, I'm really good at like three to four things tops, maybe five, maybe, but really probably three. And I also think too, being able to say to doing your listing presentations, you know, this is what I do. This is what I do well. Here's the data to back that up. I love the one thing you said. I just want to go back to this because it is really a powerful thing. I encourage you, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, to explore other agents before making a decision. Why would someone say that? Well, to me, it demonstrates a really high level of value because you are actually saying something that is in their best interest. And I think that is a real demonstration of character and the willingness to say your needs are more important than mine, which is really a significant message that I'm assuming most agents aren't going to communicate in that listing presentation. I love that you say, I encourage you to talk to others.
Well, you're not really letting the wolf into the hen house because chances are they're not going to let the wolf into
right.
They're not going to do it.
Right.
You're giving them good advice and they really should do it. Once in a while, I have that happen. And then they call me a few weeks later. They're like, actually, I took your advice. I interviewed three other agents. What a waste of my time. It made you look better. And I'll be like, yeah.
Right. Well, either way, it's going to make you look good because whether or not you even get the thing, they're going to remember that you were so honest and so helpful that even if, you know, it's that sort of almost reciprocity thing, principle of reciprocity where we do something for someone, they feel an obligation to sort of return that favor. But you're absolutely right. It reminds me of when I was a financial advisor a million years ago, the top agent or the top financial advisor in our office, $1 million way, you know, big revenue producer. He goes, I'm going to tell you guys exactly what I do every day and none of you are going to do it. So, and you're right. So by telling, you know, the client, hey, this is what I really suggest you should do. They're not going to do it, but, they might do it. And that's in their best interest if they do. If they don't, they still look at you and go, wow, that person was willing to invite in the competition because that's how confident he is in his own services. I think that's a powerful message.
It's also a sad commentary about what you said is that we're sitting there. I'm giving you all this, I think is great advice. I mean, this is the stuff that's made me over $1 million a year, but most people won't do it. And I learned that years ago because I used to be I used to keep everything close to the chest and I didn't want to share. And because I thought, I don't want somebody to get my ideas, you know. I tell everybody everything that I do. There's very seldom that somebody, I'm the only agent in our office that uses our office for networking events. I just had one two nights ago. We had 35 people here. I invited a whole bunch of attorneys and it would cost me $600. I had a group of 35 attorneys and CPAs in my office for $600. Sorry, that's a great deal. And we just yip yap. No agenda, no presentation. I had some music going on. I bought a bunch of booze. I ordered three pizzas. And I told them, there's no agenda. Would you like to come over for a mixer? It's from 6 to 8. Boom. I mean, and they're in my turf. They're on my turf. I mean, this is something I just started and I read the book 20 years ago. I should have done this a long time ago, but that's something anybody can do because, you know, if you think about it, I couldn't take 35 attorneys and CPAs out to coffee for $600.
Right.
Now I got them all circulating and chit-chatting. It's like, this is gold. I think I'm going to keep doing this stuff.
Yeah. And it's interpersonal, and it's also of service to them, because they do have clients they need to refer. They do have these problems that you can help solve, and vice versa. Of course, your clients need estate planning attorneys. They need divorce attorneys sometimes. Yeah. They need accountants and professional services. And I love that. That is a great, we have a space here at our office. Like I said earlier, we have almost 800 agents. Do you know how often one of our agents uses our space? Which, by the way, 24/7 access. We do not even, like, they can come in anytime, 3 a.m, they can come in. Nobody ever uses it. And which is a shame, because you're absolutely right. Education, in-person education, we're all sick of Zoom meetings, everyone. Let's remember that. Great. And Michael, I could talk to you all day, but you're too busy to talk to me all day. And I would like to really thank
you. Hours.
Well, that is, you have given us so much value in this. Really, I really encourage everyone. Michael said probably about 10 things that every one of our listeners could start doing or adjust their strategy to do a little bit differently. It was really amazing. And all of this is also in his book, Seller Mistakes. Again, top seller on Amazon, number one, actually, on Amazon. So we have a link to that in the show notes. Please pick up the book. Consider also maybe sharing it with your clients. This is a great, maybe somebody who's not quite ready to sell, but wants to get, say, hey, I've got a book I want you to read, so that you can get educated, so that when you are ready, imagine doing that for somebody. We now have something to give them, and it's a value. Will they read it? Who knows? But they're going to see that you care enough about what their process is to actually help educate them. And you, the agent, should read it too, because you're going to learn exactly how Michael has done it for 25 plus years. And he is really at the top of the mountain as far as production goes. So why not just steal his ideas? He put them all out there for you to take.
You can always call, if you have a client that you're going to be interviewing for in a few weeks, you can call him and say, hey, I'm going to send you a book. It's from this crazy guy in Pasadena who wrote this book. 40,000 people bought it. It's the number 3 Wall Street Journal. It's somebody who really nailed the principles down, and I'm just going to send you the book, and you can go on Amazon. I think it's like $10 for the soft cover. If you want, I'm not trying to sell a book. I'm trying to help you get some ideas, but you can send it to them. They'll read it, because there's no other book out there like that. And as long as you agree to those principles, and the principles are not that big of a deal, you're not going to do dual agency. You're not going to rely on open houses. Sure, you can have a real estate sign. Sure, you're going to do mailers. Sure, you're going to do all that stuff. But it's really going to help you out. It's going to make you look really smart too. It will cut out this is one of the things they'll do is when they read it, the chapter about hiring friends and family members, most likely it's going to get them to go, forget this. I'm not going to hire a friend or family member. It's going to open up an opportunity for you there if there is an opportunity. But that's just an idea that you can send them out. Or, if you wanted to, you can send them to my website and they can listen to the audiobook for free. That's kind of awkward, of course. But you can also send them a digital copy. I'm not sure how that works with digital versions, because they have to have a Kindle for that.
Sure. Well, we will, by the way, Michael just said something very, very generous. So if anyone wants to listen to his audiobook, it is for free on his website, michaelbbell.com. We'll have a link to that as well.
Yeah, you don't have to sign in or anything like that. It's just free.
It's as generous as I've ever heard from an author. So thank you, Michael, for that. Everyone, please support Michael. Let him know how well he did on the show today. Let him know in particular, not how well he performed, but how well he assisted you in your business. We really, getting somebody like a Michael and all of our guests, these are busy people with not a ton of time. And Michael does not need to sell these books to survive. He's doing this out of the goodness of his heart. So thank you, Michael, on behalf of the audience, for all your tips, all your advice, and for the book itself, and also a free audiobook, guys. I mean, come on, that is incredible.
And just so you know, I'm not trying to sell a book. Believe it or not, if you're a self-published author on Amazon, they rip you off. You don't really make that much money. So
no, it's tough.
It's about to get the information out there and hopefully making a positive change. But I wanted to throw something out there also, and I'd be a horrible realtor if I didn't say this, but If you have any needs in the Pasadena area, I work Pasadena, La Cañada, San Marino, San Gabriel, Sierra Madre, Monrovia, Glendale, Burbank, La Cañada, La Crescenta, those areas. I'm an expert in those areas. If you have a need out there, if you have a client, if you just want to chit chat about stuff, pick up the phone and call me. I'd love to talk to agents, anybody, if I can help.
And
you out.
If you have clients that move to those areas,
yeah,
Michael is the guy. So please, other agents, consider building a relationship with Michael, because he has clients that move out of those areas too. And maybe you guys could, you know, become partners in that sense. So if anyone out there is looking for a realtor in those areas, of course, Michael is the guy. But even if you're an agent in a different state and city, and if you have agents or clients that move there, definitely consider connecting with Michael.
Get this. I love paying referral fees.
Yeah. I mean, who, I don't know anyone. I can't imagine any, you know, referrals are such a missed opportunity in this industry. And boy, we could talk about that. Maybe I'll have you back to do a whole thing on referrals, because I think that's
Yeah.
Well, Michael, thank you on behalf of the audience. Guys, go to his website, michaelbbell.com, download the audiobook, buy the hardcover book as well, or an electronic copy. Please send it to your prospective sellers. This is demonstrating value. We know that the NAR says, hey, clients will hire agents they know, like, and trust. What better way to demonstrate know, like, and trust by saying, I've got a gift for you that I think is actually going to help you when you're ready to sell. Or even if you don't want to send it to your sellers, send it to yourself and learn how Michael is doing this to win listing presentations. And boy, if you want to see a pretty impressive roster of listings, go to his website and see some of his listings, and you'll get a sense of exactly the kind of sort of homes that he wins over. So, Michael, thank you on behalf of the audience. You're welcome. On behalf of Michael and myself, we want to thank the audience for sticking around to the very end. Please support Michael. Let him know how much you appreciated him being on the show. Please tell a friend about this podcast. We are 6 years in, and we have the most listeners and viewers we've ever had, but we could always use more. So please tell another agent in your office about this interview with Michael. Shoot them a link to our website, or which is keepingitrealpod.com, or just whatever podcast app you're on. Search for Keeping It Real. Hit that subscribe button. Please also leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. We take all your comments very seriously. The show is for you, so we want to hear how to make it better. So please keep us in the loop there. And last, support our sponsors. They're the ones who keep the bills paid and keep our staff producing these episodes. So please check out their products and services. We love our sponsors. Michael, thank you so much. We will see everybody on the next episode.
Thanks.